It's Saturday, July 29th, 2006. You're moving at the speed of creativity with Wesley Fryer, narrowcasting from Wichita, Kansas. Good afternoon from warm and sunny Wichita, Kansas, and welcome to the second of several podcasts from the Mid-America Technology Institute, sponsored by MACE, held in Winfield, Kansas, this past Thursday and Friday. This presentation is actually a recording of my first presentation from yesterday morning, and it was called Safe Digital Social Networking. And with the passage of the DOPA, Deleting Online Predators Act, by an overwhelming majority in the U.S. House of Representatives this past week, I think this topic is particularly timely and important for us to consider as we continue in an election year in the United States to hear more and more about MySpace, dangers of online predators, internet safety, and things along that line. But as you'll hear in the presentation, I think we need to be doing a lot more than passing legislation and banning websites on school networks. There is a great deal of education that needs to take place, not only for the students in our classrooms, but also for teachers and for parents and for community members and also for legislators. You know, I'm reminded of a recent podcast I listened to from TWIT, which is This Week in Technology, that's hosted by Leo Laporte. And I'll include a link to that in the podcast show notes, because that's a pretty interesting podcast to check out for current trends. And they told a story a few weeks back about some group that was giving iPods to United States legislators in Washington, D.C. And they talked about how amazed they were and what an impact it made on them. But it really revealed how maybe out of touch some of our legislative leaders might be with what's been happening in regard to digital media and youth culture. And I think we really see a lot of people wishing that the internet would go away, responding really in a reactionary, technocratic way, instead of having some vision and recognizing that we need laws that are going to allow students to be prepared for the future. I know that's trite. I probably say that, you know, way too many times, but it's just so doggone true. And the DOPA law actually amends the Communications Act of, I think, 1934. And I'll include also in the podcast show notes some links to that text and to some other websites where people are encouraging folks to contact their legislators and take action. But no matter what happens in the coming weeks with regard to the DOPA law, educators are going to have to continue working with students and helping teach them. And our moral obligation to prepare them for the world in which we live, not the world which some people would like us to live in, is going to continue. And so the good news is, I think even if DOPA passes, there's still going to be room for the use of non-commercial websites, which include the one that we talk about primarily in this session, think.com, but also Moodle. Moodle is a great open source software solution. In fact, the next two podcasts I'll be publishing deal specifically with Moodle, and one of them is a real fun collection of songs that some people wrote about Moodle for this last conference, but the other one really talks about the technical support and the instructional reasons why more and more schools need to be looking at Moodle as a solution for extending the conversations of the classroom outside the bounds of the traditional class day. So, hope you find this of interest. I would really encourage you again to check out the links in the podcast show notes, and feel free to contact me either by using the comment space in the podcast. You can leave a shout out at the iTunes Music Store and just do a search in the podcast directory for Moving at the Speed of Creativity, or you can search for my name, Wesley Fryer, or you can always visit my personal homepage at www.wesfryer.com. Well, good morning. My name is Wes Fryer, and I'm excited that you're here, because it is just after 8:30, and this is the second day, and we live in interesting times, don't we? We're going to talk today about safe digital social networking, but first I want to tell you how excited I am to be here, because I grew up in Manhattan, And although I will admit I've lived in Texas now longer than I've lived in Kansas, you're fine, come on in. I really do consider myself to be a Kansan. So my license plate for the last 13 years has said Texas, Kansan. And it's very cool to have a chance to come present in Kansas. I've never, since I've been an educator, I was an elementary teacher for 6 years. I was been at the College of Education at Texas Tech for the past five. And anyway, this is my first chance to present in Kansas, and I'm pretty excited to be here. So we are, at AT&T as education advocates, answering this question. And I've got some cards, and I'm going to share some links with you, because all the resources I'll be sharing today are online. This is being recorded for CanEd Live, and I'll be posting this as a podcast on my website. I've got a little iRiver recorder, and so don't feel like you have to jot all this down, because you'll be able to link to this kind of thing. But we've got a lot more bandwidth today than ever before, right? Our schools are wired. What are we doing with our bandwidth? We're testing. Oh, okay. Well, what else are you doing with your bandwidth? And so I'm excited because I've joined the AT&T team. Laura. Laura Smith is from Kansas City, but she's an AT&T advocate in the state of Kansas, and I'm in the state of Oklahoma, but I'm only two and a half hours away. So anyway, I'm excited to be in a new role, and my role is really just to work with K-12 and university teachers to do creative, powerful things with technology. And I am passionate about a lot of things that we need to be doing with our kids, and we're going to talk about some of those today. So I'm going to share some links with you first, and these will be the only things you might want to jot down, and then we'll give a little outline and get into it. So my blog is called Moving at the Speed of Creativity, and I am now, as I present at conferences, in the habit of generally sharing as many resources as I can, because I believe it's all about sharing and collaboration. That is the only way. We saw that We Didn't Start the Fire by Billy Joel. I mean, think how much more information and how much faster information is growing than it was even when he made that, you know, song, whenever that was, probably back in, was that the 70s maybe?
80s.
In the 80s. So we are really moving at the speed of creativity. Or we can move at the speed of creativity if we choose to, and so that's kind of why I named my blog that. I've set up a wiki, which, if you don't know what a wiki is, it's a web page that you can just write to right through your web browser. So you don't have to use FrontPage or Dreamweaver or any kind of program in order to put content on the internet and share it. Links, it includes pictures, files that you upload. And this one is on a site called Peanut Butter Wiki, because it's just as easy as a peanut butter sandwich, PB Wiki. And so you can go to this website, which is just mti2006.pbwiki.com, and you'll have a link to Will Richardson's. We've had several other presenters from the conference link to their link their resources to that wiki. So anyway, if you get those sites, you'll be able to get all the content from today's session. The last thing I'll say is all the images that I'll be using are, that I have it taken myself, are free legal images that I obtained from the Flickr Creative Commons site. And Flickr may be blocked in your school district, and you do need to know that if you do a search for naked, you know, you're probably going to see something there. So it's blocked in a lot of districts, but there is not a better resource I've ever seen when you're doing a presentation for finding relevant pictures. I'm going to talk about a fork in the road. Well, let me search for that. Gosh, there they are. Because Flickr pictures are uploaded by the users and they're tagged. But the very cool thing is that many people use what's called a Creative Commons license to give permission up front to say, please use my picture in your presentation, in your multimedia project, on your web page. And then they can say different conditions. And the one that I use is attribution only. Give me credit. So you'll see the website. And I'll try to model some different strategies I think we need to use with kids. And one, of course, is proper attribution and proper respect for copyright. So let's get right into it. And we're going to talk about digital social networking today. And I've abbreviated this DSN. And I'm going to encourage us to think about a metaphor of driving. How many of you have had the privilege of helping a child learn how to drive and take to the road themselves independently without you? All right.
I have not. My children are in elementary school, and that thing, that experience is down the road. I, you know, experienced that as a kid. But we're going to talk about how we really want to help kids acquire skills before they get in this potentially very useful tool, which is called a car or the internet, but also a potentially dangerous one, which, while it may not kill them directly like a car can certainly endanger them if they make bad choices. And we want to help students make good choices out in the real world, because that's what we're supposed to do, is prepare kids for life. So we're going to talk about internet safety issues that are raised in this whole discussion, and I'm going to contend that digital social networking is here to stay. We cannot put our heads in the sand and pretend that MySpace and Zanga and Bebo and all of these social networking sites are going to go away. Folks, it is incredible how much money is made per day on these sites, and you better believe that the people creating these things, number one, are not going to stop, and number two, that the teenagers who want to socialize are going to stop taking advantage of opportunities to socialize. What we need to do is help them make good decisions, be safe, not endanger themselves, and I think leverage these tools for good uses, right? Tools can be used for good or for evil, and the internet is no exception. So the last thing we'll wrap up with is to talk about some strategies for digital social networking. And Cheryl Oakes is an educator in Maine, and if we're on time, in about 20 minutes, we're going to connect to her via iChat, which is a video conferencing program that's built right in here to the Mac. Good news is, video conferencing to the desktop, which is what we're doing today, is better than it ever has been before. Have any of you used Skype? S-K-Y-P-E. Skype now supports video conferencing. I had a video conference this week with a friend of mine who lives in Moose Jaw, Canada. I was in Oklahoma City. I'm on my Mac, using my built-in camera and all this stuff. He's on his Windows machine, wireless outside his house. It is hot in Moose Jaw, Canada right now, or it was then. And anyway, the possibilities of doing those kind of connections, it is really exciting, and I'm going to contend that we need to be engaging kids in collaboration, and that's what we're going to talk about in the next session, is messy assessment. And I think video conferencing and safe opportunities to use these tools. I mean, I know Cheryl because I've met her. I haven't met her face to face, but this is her website. We're going to talk about a great resource called Think.com, which, even if the Deleting Online Predators Act, DOPA, passes the Senate, which it probably will, and I'll mention that briefly, you're still going to be able to use this tool, and I think many others, if I'm reading the text right. So we'll wrap up with a few conclusions. This particular session, we won't be very interactive, but if you stay for the next session, I'm going to give you a chance to talk in groups, and we'll do a little bit more. But this is the interactive part will be when we talk with Cheryl, because I'm going to leave time for you to ask her questions, because she's an elementary teacher. Of her 200-plus kids, she's got over 70 using Think.com to digitally social network all summer, and the kids love it, and it's moderated, and it's an environment where they can safely do this and learn together. So what the heck is digital social networking? Well, who's heard of DOPA, the Deleting Online Predators Act? Anybody heard that it passed 2 days ago by a huge margin? This is from the govtrack.us website, and it's House Resolution 5319. There were 419 in favor, only 15 opposing. It's election time, and everybody wants to say, we're protecting kids. Of course we want to protect kids. No question. We also want to prepare kids for their future. And so, I'm not going to go into extensive detail, but when you look at the text of the House resolution, what it looks at is amending the Communications Act of 1934 to require E-rate schools. Anybody in E-rate school? Probably just about everybody. To protect minors from what? Commercial social networking websites. So, this is a feature I really like in OS X, where I can zoom in on anything. So, protect minors from commercial, that, actually, it's, the com there is cut off, because I just copied it from the actual legislation that's online. But Think.com is not commercial. There are different tools that are out there that are commercial. If you go to my blog and other edu bloggers like Will Richardson, who you heard yesterday, a lot of people are going to be talking about DOPA and what is this going to mean, because I think it's probably going to pass. And I think it's going to mean we need to engage in conversations about how to prepare kids for the world. And that's what we're talking about today. So, you know what? We are going to do a little bit of quick talking. Let's do a turn, pair, and share. Turn to somebody beside you. Appoint one person to write down a few things. Jot down what you think digital social networking is. I want you to take about 2 minutes and do that. What is it? What is digital social networking? Okay, let me go ahead and get your attention. I'm going to cut you off just a slight bit early. Did that sound like a learning classroom? You know, when you walk into a classroom, you cannot tell whether kids are engaged. You can tell whether they are acting compliantly. You can tell whether they're on task, but you can't tell whether they're engaged. And a learning classroom, I believe, needs to involve a lot of conversation. We're going to talk about that in the next session. And I love a turn, pair, and share when you get people to write, because when you ask a group, be they adults or kids, okay, so what'd you say? What do you get a lot of times? Or what do you think? Look, I saw you writing. Okay, I know you have ideas. So who would like to share? We won't go around and get everyone's, but what do you think? What is digital social networking?
Well, we kind of compared digital social networking to some of us may remember cruising the boulevard on Friday and Saturday nights, and you go and you cruise the boulevard and see your friends. Our kids today, that's what they're doing because they don't cruise the boulevard anymore.
That's right. It's not safe to go to the mall by yourself, so we go online, where it is really safe, right? Okay, what else? What else did y'all say? Okay, it's a communication tool. Very good. I'm not getting inspiration out and going to write these down, but that would be a good thing to do, right?
Yeah.
What else did you say? It's all about sharing. There's a lot of ways to share. There are a lot of things to share. There are legal things to share. There are illegal things to share. There are safe ways we share. There are not safe ways we share. So definitely the whole idea of a sharing community and doing it electronically fits in here. What else? Right. Yep. Identifying people with common interests. Will Richardson mentioned, I think, a book called The Long Tail yesterday, which I haven't read, but I've read about. You know, Amazon functions a lot now in the long tail. And what that means is, in the past, if you were going to commercially market something, you had to have a pretty big market share in order to get someone convinced or whatever that you were going to sell this. You know, we have access to a global audience. So you can have interest in a very, you know, detailed thing. I mean, you can be all about gourmet venison cooking, you know. I just love to cook deer, and I want to hook up with other people that are interested in that, or I don't know what it is. But the fact is, we have unprecedented capability to connect like that. And so what we hope, I mean, what kids will assume is, oh, of course, this is another 15-year-old girl who's in, you know, Minnesota. Is it really? Well, maybe, but it also may not be. And it's very important that we talk about those kinds of issues. My screensaver has started. That may be telling me to move on. But does anybody have one other thing? I know everyone wrote something down, or it looked like you were. So anything else that you said about digital social networking or what you think that it is? Yes, and I don't have those survey results, but I'm glad you said that, because kids report they often feel safer online in front of their computer than they do in real life. So they will say different things. They will share more. They will act differently when they feel very safe. So, MySpace. How many of you have been on MySpace? Not necessarily created an account, but gone there. Okay? There are millions of people on MySpace. I didn't bring the article, but Ron Henley, my uncle here, who is videotaping. Ron, you're on, your name's on CanEd Live now. Takes a Business 2.0 magazine, and it has this big article in the latest issue about South Korea. And a ridiculous amount of the young people in South Korea, like a third of all of them, are on this social networking site. It's just huge, huge. And, you know, they're bringing it to the United States. It's going to roll out a U.S. version later in August. And so, MySpace is the social networking site du jour for some, but does anybody know what it is if you're in the university environment? MySpace is Facebook, okay? I think Bebo is pretty popular in some areas in Canada. I think Bebo may be a little more popular, but there's these different tools, and, you know, why do kids go there? You've answered the question. To interact, to meet friends, to meet other people, because they're social. Are the kids we teach social, particularly the adolescents? Are we going to change that? Are we going to make them not be social? I don't think so. Blogging fits into this, and this is part of the definition that DOPA has for defining commercial social networking, is journaling and a site that allows people to journal. Instant messaging, or IM, is part of this. I think it's the interaction we see with digital natives. And if you've heard of Mark Prinsky, he wrote an article a number of years ago that talks about digital immigrants. Who's a digital immigrant here? Okay, probably all of us. Maybe the IT students that are, I think, helping around may not be. Devin and I may be like bridge, you know, kind of in the middle. But, you know, I had my first computer in I think, 7th grade math. It was a Commodore 64 at Manhattan Middle School. We programmed in BASIC, right, because that's what you did with computers at that time. But the kids are digital natives. They've grown up with this. They breathe it. They have the VCR gene. You know, you can just automatically program the VCR because genetically that got put into their DNA. So, let's talk about driving. Make a metaphor for DSM. Okay? Is anybody a driver's ed teacher? Anybody teach driver's ed? How is that? Do you enjoy that?
I haven't for a while.
What was the most challenging thing about teaching driver's ed? Was it something they needed training in, or is it just something they did naturally? It's a stupid question, Wes. Of course they needed help learning how to especially drive a standard transmission car. I mean, how many of us could remember with ourselves as we learn, or with kids if you've done that, you know, chugging along, and when do you shift, by the way? How do you tell someone when to shift? It is always at, you know, 25 miles an hour, first and second. I heard someone talk about this in the context of expert versus novice. Novices do need rules. You know, it's harder to tell a novice, that's when the engine sounds right. I remember my scoutmaster, Ray Hightower, in Manhattan, drove our bus, and it didn't have an RPM gauge, and I always would sit there and go, how does he know when to shift? Well, you know, he listens to the engine. Anyway, yes, kids need help, and kids need our help today in the social networking environment. It can be dangerous on the road. Why is insurance so high for teenagers? Because they make bad choices, because they're immature, because they screw up. Of course, now, in the digital social networking environment, the bad choices they make may haunt them forever, because the employer may come back and look at the pictures they posted online at the party or wherever, say, oh, well, you were obviously a wild child as a kid. I'm not sure we want you handling our multi-million dollar computer network or whatever they are interviewing for. Do we always know the conditions that we're going to drive in? When you were teaching driver's ed, did you all do simulators or what? You didn't have simulators? So we had a mix. We did simulators and we did the real thing. But you couldn't prepare for everything. So what's the goal of driver's ed, probably big picture, besides the actual mechanical, here's how I, you know, both hands on the steering wheel, I think about my following distance or whatever that is. What do you want in terms of judgment at the end of driver's education? Safe driver, what else? Somebody who knows rules and follows the rules. Okay? Someone who can plan, who can think, and how about decision making? You know? Because if it's foggy and it's rainy or it's snowy or it's dark or whatever, if somebody swerves into your lane, you gotta make the right decision. And if you don't, it's gonna have consequences. And I think we can see a similar environment in digital social networking, because, folks, we do not know what the future holds. Okay? We don't know what the next MySpace is going to be. But I can tell you with a lot of certainty from where I sit that we're going to see more interaction, more of this type of thing happening, and schools cannot ignore it, and it is an insufficient response to just block the site at school. And we're going to talk about some schools that have done that. We need to help kids. Kids need us. Some people say, oh, the kids are on their own, they're digital natives, they know it all. No, they don't. Kids don't have fear of using the tools, but they need us. I mean, do kids know how to write wonderful five-paragraph essays and present in front of large groups and be persuasive? And do they naturally acquire those skills? Do they just come to school with that? Of course not. We help them acquire those skills of literacy. And so students need to know how to act appropriately in different contexts. What's appropriate for me to share when I'm at school face-to-face with friends that I verify and see. You know, Jenny, I can see you really are a female and you really, you know, I can maybe guess at your age. I'm not going to do that. But, you know, online, they don't know. So we need to help them make decisions. We need to prepare them for the real world. Let's talk about some of the issues that are raised here with internet safety. And as I already said, of course, we want to protect children. No politician in the United States, anywhere else, no parent, no educator is going to stand up and say, we're not interested in protecting kids. We just want to get them to pass a test. Yeah, we've got to pass a test, but everyone knows we want to protect children and help them grow up in an environment that is as safe as possible. Okay? But predators are real. Can it be dangerous to go to the mall in Wichita, Kansas? Yeah. We could probably brainstorm a lot of things that could happen if we went to the mall. Okay? iSafe, which is at iSafe.org, has some statistics, and Laura mentioned one of these. The last one, 19% of kids feel safer on the internet than they do in the real world. A lot of them feel it's fine to post a picture. They've met someone face to face. 10% have met someone from the internet face to face. It's scary. Dangers are everywhere. And the media has done us a favor, but they're also using an age-old formula. Okay? We'll mention the favor, and the favor is more people know about MySpace today, and more people are talking about it. That's a good thing. The age-old formula is fear and death to get people to come to their news site, to get people to watch the news. You know, let's stir up a frenzy and convince people the most dangerous thing in the world is flying on an airplane because you can crash. Well, what do the statistics tell you? It's a lot more dangerous to get in your car than it is to get in an airplane. And I would probably bet that statistically, it's going to be more dangerous for a young person to go to a large urban mall or walk on a street at night in an area that's a statistically high crime area than it would be for them to just, you know, go to MySpace. Search Google News for MySpace. This was a couple days ago. There were 7,790 articles that mentioned MySpace on the 4,000 plus articles or news sources that Google News traces. This is one of them. Teen becomes Oakland's 78th homicide. And if we look down here, it says, Martin was in the neighborhood to see a girl he had met on MySpace. That girl didn't kill him. I don't think he ever met her because he was killed in Oakland. It's Oakland's 78th homicide for the year. But this person may have made a bad choice. Here's an article from the Dallas Morning News on June 1st, 2006. Irving ISD and the Metroplex has a larger laptop initiative than the state of Maine. Texas is big. They've been doing this for 4 years. The gist of this article was, isn't it great that Irving's given kids all these laptops because now they're taking pictures of themselves holding weapons and with their gang colors and they're networking online. Isn't it great? We've wasted this money. They actually quoted me in this article and called me. One problem was it says, Wesley Fryer, who blogs about technology and education from his office at Texas Tech. I actually did do a few other things there besides blog. But they quoted me well. Said, school districts can't simply block websites out of fear. They must foster discussion on appropriate use. He compares it to avoiding talking about safe sex because of worries the information will encourage sex. hey, I am glad I went to high school and middle school in Kansas. Because in Lubbock, Texas, where I've lived for 13 years, guess what? There is no sex ed whatsoever in the schools. And I'll guarantee you, I learned some things in 8th grade in Manhattan, Kansas, that nobody ever talked to me about again. And, you know, I'm doing the driving metaphor a little more than a sex ed one. But this idea of preparing kids for the real world. We need to prepare them for the real world. Well, is liability an issue in schools? Is anybody a principal or superintendent? Do we happen to have any? Don't have them here today? Are they concerned about liability issues? Big time. That's like major on their radar screen. So liability is a concern and an issue. And when you go from MySpace, liability school, you're going to see articles again on Google News that are talking about the ways we're responding to this. And a lot of times it's just blocking it. So is the problem technology? Was that Oakland kid killed because of technology? He made some choices, right? And I don't know all the details of that. But I think that technology is often a window that reveals issues and problems that some people would just rather not talk about. We'd rather not talk about the teenage pregnancy problem we have in our community. We'd rather not talk about the gang problem that we have in our major cities. We'd rather not talk about poverty, which, by the way, is the number one thing that takes our test scores down. And you don't see people disaggregate that, but when you take the data apart, you know, our wealthy white kids beat up on Scandinavian kids all the time. Taiwan, Singapore, wherever you want. We got like 20%. One in five kids in Oklahoma is living below the poverty line. It makes a difference. That's a correlated thing in terms of test scores. Technology is a window that shows us problems, and in many cases, I don't think technology is the problem. So we are looking through a window. That may be a window that's broken, but my contention is we can't just paint the window black. Oh, we blocked that at our school. Our liability problems are taken care of. Don't worry, school board. We've handled it. Kids can't go there. DOPA. Hey, we passed legislation. We protect the kids. That is not going to do it. We're going to have to talk about these issues. We're going to have to learn about them ourselves. And we're going to have to help kids learn how to be safe. I believe face-to-face conversation is an answer to this. We need more conversations happening between ourselves as educators, with the parents of the kids that we serve, with the community members that are out there, with the press, with our politicians. We got to talk about this stuff. Because I believe that conversation has more potential to change our perceptions of the world than anything else. I can show you all kinds of graphs. I could show you videos. I could give you reports. But if you talk to somebody and you really start to think differently about something as a result of that conversation, I mean, you're probably going to walk away changed. And we need the kids to talk. We need the adults to talk. We need to figure out how we can respond appropriately to this. Because social networking is here to stay. I was with Marco Torres, who's an amazing educator, and I think I'll put a link to his site. He was the California State Teacher of the Year a year ago. Phenomenal teacher in San Fernando High School, where they get a new principal about every 7 months. They have about 5,000 kids. Marco has had kids actually get in trouble for going over the barbed wire fence to get back into his class, which is a social studies class, because they're so excited to create video and tell stories and be engaged. Anyway, Marco had just the last week been on the streets of LA with his kids. They walked almost 20 miles to participate in the immigration protests. And how do you think the kids got organized? How'd they do it? It was digital social networking. It was instant messaging via cell phone and computer, and it was via MySpace and the other websites they use to connect. And some people say, oh my gosh, that's horrible. How often have you seen kids in your high school, middle school, or elementary school get organized around a political issue that they really care about and do something about it? It's an interesting question. So, what tools do we have? They were using MySpace and instant messaging. It's amazing today what we can do. This is website whatsay.com. It invites regular people to be journalists. You've got something to say, you've got some news to report, report it. This is a new issue that Pew Internet just released on July 19th of this month, a portrait of the Internet's new storytellers, bloggers. Okay? And it says 8% of Internet users are about 12 million adults keep a blog. 39% of users, or 57 million, read them, a significant increase. And the thing is, it's not just kids, but it's a growing number of people who are writing on the internet, who are blogging. I think it's here to stay. Okay, we're going to see these tools continue to grow. So what do we do about it? Well, I'm going to really quickly show you a few slides of Think.com, and then we're going to video chat with Cheryl. She's probably wondering what's going on because we're 6 minutes late. But have any of you heard of Think.com before? Have you used it? Anybody used it? Okay, you have. Cool. With a, what grade level? Primarily fourth and fifth. Well, Cheryl's an elementary teacher and has been using it for 4 years. You just go to think.com, and this is a free website that allows for moderation. So Cheryl allowed me to join as a virtual teacher at Wells Elementary School this last year. So this is my page. You can see I posted questions about Maine, and the kids responded. When you go to create tools, you have choices to write, to post media, to interact. You have to log in to get to this environment. Kids can be kicked out if they make bad choices. But really what we want to do is be around when the kids make bad choices. If they choose to post something they shouldn't, and they're not allowed to post pictures of themselves or personal photos, you know, if they choose to threaten somebody and cyberbully somebody, much better to do it in a protected, monitored, moderated environment where we could do something about it and talk to them about it and have a teachable moment, rather than have them just do it out at home or at a friend's house where there's no adult around to help. This is what the right tool looks like. They title and text. They can say it's an article, poem, report, story, or text. They go to media. They can upload pictures. They can make a list. They can have mini pics, which is a gallery that they have to choose from. They can upload music. They can upload movies. They can upload files. They can add interactive things, which is so cool. Make a message board. Post a question and get responses to it. Have a debate. Vote on something. Brainstorm. All these things are very easy to do. And so I posted some things about Lubbock. What do you want to know about Lubbock? I posted some pictures about Lubbock, where I live. I asked them to have a debate. What do you think about laptops? They're in Maine, right? All the junior high kids in Maine have laptops. They are in a unique place, but they're in elementary school. So what do they think about laptops? And there's all kinds of things we could have done. Have you used your sibling's laptop? You have an older brother? Are games good? Here's a question to ask kids. Well, one of them didn't think so. The children need exercise, Lauren said. Good point, Lauren. I agree. We don't need people sitting in front of their Xbox, you know, 24/7 on Saturdays and weekends and time off. We need people to be outside. In fact, there's a great book called Last Child in the Woods, Saving Children from Nature Deficit Disorder. It talks about how important unstructured time and natural environments are and how so many of our schools have taken that away and the skills that kids don't have. But I digress. So, lots of different things you can do, and you can moderate this. So, let's go ahead and I chat with Cheryl. She's waiting. And so, Cheryl's going to just talk a little bit about Think.com and what their experiences have been with using this tool with their kids. And so I've given you a little bit of schema or background about the tool. And so she's going to talk for 5 minutes or so, and then we're going to give a chance for you to ask her questions. How many of you have video conference from your classroom? Has anybody done this before? It's a pretty rare thing right now for people to do. But again, the tools are getting more and more powerful that let us do this. I mean, anytime we're using technology, we're taking risks, right? Is it going to work? Are we going to be able to connect? Okay, well, we've had a good teachable moment about troubleshooting video conferencing connections, and they have heard about Think.com and would love to hear from you. So if you could, I think I'll probably mute our mic. Are you getting any feedback, or is it okay?
I'm okay. I'm trying to get out of Skype. It's still ringing.
Okay. Well, we're hearing you and seeing you fine. So if you just want to tell us who you are, what you do, and then tell us a little bit about your experiences with Think.com.
Okay. Well, I previously was a computer lab teacher at Wells Elementary School, and just last week I was appointed part-time technology coordinator and part-time tech integrator to all the buildings in our district.
And congratulations on that.
Thank you.
And so I told them that you've been using Think.com for about 4 years, and
right.
they saw some of the screenshots and that kind of thing of Think.com. So what's happening this summer with Think.com and your kids?
What's happening is I've been chatting with 76 out of the 200 students that are in our third and fourth grade. So it's really been a popular avenue for kids to communicate. And just last night I asked some students, you know, who they've been chatting with, and I can't pronounce the names of the countries and states and cities, but it's in India, Thailand, they've been talking to people in Australia, Texas, and New York City.
Now, how in the world could you feel safe about that when DOPA just passed the U.S. House of Representatives and we all know we want to protect kids?
Well, Think.com is a protected, moderated, monitored site. Only school systems who apply and get registered can be involved in this. And so an administrator has to set up each student name, receive a password, and then the school administrator is required to check anything the students post in terms of images every 15 days. So I feel pretty confident, and this is my fourth year using it, that these kiddos are safe. Nobody's threatening them. They're not threatening anyone else. And they're really creating cultural relationships around the world.
That's awesome. And when I was participating, your kids even helped self-police, because I had posted a picture of my family, and they told me, you can't do that. You're not supposed to,
right.
to post pictures. So can you tell us any stories about, you know, what have been the teachable moments? When a kid has done something wrong, or how has that happened in school where the culture's maybe developed around appropriate use, or what's happened there?
Sure. At our school, we have a bully-free zone throughout our whole climate. And when we had our students go into Think.com, we talked about having, it's just an extension of our neighborhood. So it's a bully-free zone, virtual bully-free zone. And the students really picked up on that. They could police themselves with comments that other students made. And I would call those teachable moments. I'd say, okay, that's something that really is acceptable in somebody else's culture. An example is the British kid said, do you want to be me mate? And, you know, our kids were a little put off by that language. And once it was explained to them, then they understood that it was, they weren't being bullied, they weren't being threatened. So there are some good conversations to have.
Well, let me open it up to what questions that you all might have. What would you like to ask Cheryl? We could have turned, paired, and shared, and I could have had you write down questions earlier, but what would you like to ask her?
Do they have to get permission from their parents?
Do the kids have to get permission from parents to participate?
Good point. All of our students every year have to get permission from their parents, and it's our internet protocol use policy. So everyone has to have permission there to first participate. Then at Think.com, that's just an extension of our internet, we consider. But where the kids all made their own blog, after the third week when we were ready to publish and go live with that, I sent home a letter to each student and their family explaining how it worked. The student had a password and a username, and it was a protected site. And the only way that the parents could go on is if their child was with them. When we talk about internet safety and how it's a shared responsibility, I have the students 6 hours a day. They're responsible, you know, the students and parents for the other hours. So it was stated that if a parent did not want their child to have a Think.com blog site, the student still had the experience of making it, and then the parent could withdraw that at any time, as could I. If they were being inappropriate, I can just delete their site in a second. I had three parents come in and talk to me about it because they were concerned about MySpace. And as soon as we had a conversation and they experienced it, those kiddos are still online.
So it sounds like it's given you a lot of opportunities to talk to parents and have conversations about those issues, maybe that you might not have had otherwise.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
What other questions do you have?
Has she brought in like speakers from across the nation, and how do they coordinate? How would you get your speaker to be as tech savvy as you, you know, so they can do video conference.
Have you all done any video conferencing where you brought, you know, people from the outside in to class? That's a little different than think. But
well, I know Bob's class is video conference with you, and Bob's video conference with a class in Northern Maine. But that's not been, you know, something that's happened. I think with our new iSight MacBook that will happen this year more frequently.
I would say that's a little more bleeding edge than cutting edge, but we're getting closer. It's working better and better. The big thing is to convince your principal and your superintendent this can be done safely and it's powerful. You know, I mean, you have my contact information, not that I'm just the greatest person to connect with, but, you know, once you, it's a bit personal networking and building networks with different people and then bringing those folks in. So what other questions would you have for Cheryl? Concerns? What do you think your superintendent's going to ask? What do you think your principal is going to ask? What do you think the teacher next door is going to ask or wonder or fear? Okay, we don't have time for this, Cheryl. We don't have time to do this stuff. What do you say to that?
Well, I say you need to make time because part of the things that my students have learned on their own through blogging is they learn how to connect with other people. They've made their own podcast. They ask questions of other people. They made a podcast about whether online testing was good, what they liked and didn't like. And any time that you can get students to construct their own learning, reflect on their learning, that's the power for those students. And it doesn't have to be all about the technology. They should be blogging and podcasting and video conferencing about a math problem, about a literature circle. So make it work for your content area.
I like that answer. I couldn't have said it better. One more question for Cheryl. Anybody else? Wait time is really important, right? Wait time is important in the regular classroom. It's important in video conferences. More often than not, we don't wait enough when we ask questions. So that's a thing to get used to, that silence, looking at everybody. But it's just, that's what you got to do if you really want that interaction. So I know somebody else has another question. What kind of things do you want to do in the future? And then maybe you can kind of wrap up and we'll finish.
What kind of things do I want to do
in the future with the kids? What are you excited about looking forward to this next year?
Oh my gosh. I'm really excited to be going into the junior high and high school. We have one-to-one laptops in our 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th grade. And so I'm really excited about promoting the things we've done at the elementary level and moving that to the next level. I'm excited to work with some teachers that I haven't worked with before. They are so into blogging and podcasting and online surveys and the ReadWrite web, which is the web 2.0 or 2.1 tool. So once you get me started, I won't stop.
That's right. We could do a whole conference on that. Well, any kind of closing thoughts that you'd like to give? We've got, here, I'll show you the room. We have, I don't know, maybe about 20 folks that are here. So they're going to go back to their respective school districts and, you know, be getting ready for the school year. What message would you send back with them?
The first thing I would say, start a blog, because the blog is all about conversations, and if you can have conversations with students and parents, you'll just be amazed at the dialogue that you start. And if you get a chance to podcast, a two-minute reflection about what happened that day and have the students do it, or two-minute reflection at the end of the week. You'll just be so excited with the response that you get. And if they want to check out my blog, it's www.cherylokes.com.
I've already showed that to them. We've got that link on our wiki. So I appreciate you hanging with us, and I'm glad this worked. Let's all thank Cheryl. A round of applause. All right. We will see.
Thanks, Mark.
Oh, and I got to give you time. What do you got to say your thing at the end?
Over and out from Wells, Maine.
All right. Bye-bye, Cheryl.
Bye, Wes.
Isn't that cool? You can do that in your classroom, too. So we're going to have to wrap this up. But we need to teach eye safety. iSafe is one resource. There's a lot of resources. Kids need help practicing this and practicing digital social networking in a supervised environment. They are doing this already.
they will continue to do this. Even if DOPA passes and things are blocked at school, kids are going to continue to do this. So one other tool I want to tell you about is imbe.com. This is a commercial site, but it's set up more for parents, where you can have your kids register for this site, interact, and you can moderate. You choose how to moderate. This is an email from my 8-year-old who is registered, and I've blocked out his screen name. But, you know, it tells me he has posted a comment. He has posted something to his blog. And I don't have it set up where I will be the gatekeeper and approve it. But if I want, I can approve before it gets posted. I just get a report. Tells me what he's doing. And this is such a basic idea, but it's one we need to take home to our administrators, and that is, when kids write more, what happens? They write better. And if you get kids excited about writing, what happens to their frequency of writing and the quality of their writing? It goes up. So if we, and I was a fourth grade writing teacher, okay? I love to teach writing. That's like my favorite thing to teach, although I like social studies and I taught math and other things too. But I love writing, and I want to get kids literate. I want to get our society, and it starts with you. It starts with me. You know, it starts with the kids we have. And if we can get them excited about writing and excited about learning, that's powerful. So Moodle is another great tool. Cost is free. And it can be used as a social networking environment where you have wikis and you have blogs and you've got discussion boards, and it can all be closed. You can moderate and see what's happening in that environment. So let's wrap up with conclusions. We need to respond, I believe, in a way that is dynamical and not reactionary. What the heck does that mean, Wes? We're not in a college class. Why are you bringing these words in? Well, there's a book that Virginia Postal wrote and published back in 1998 that I love, and it's called The Future and Its Enemies, The Growing Conflict Over Creativity, Enterprise, and Progress. And she starts this book by talking about what our visions of the future used to be. Anybody remember the Jetsons? Okay? Anybody been to Tomorrowland at Disney? That's changed over time. Our vision of what the future and technology's role within this environment, it's changed. But she points out that people are kind of falling into two camps. Those that are reactionary and status and just want to preserve the status quo and stop change, and those that are dynamical and that can embrace change and recognize that we can ride the wave. And if we try to ride the wave instead of fight the tide, we can probably be a lot more not only successful, but we can prepare kids for their future a lot better. So that's a long way of saying we need to be doing the things that I'm talking about here. Kids are going to drive on the information superhighway alone. They are going to be there without you. They already are there in many cases, not most cases, without you, without their parents. The kids that get on our highways and streets typically do not get on there without some prior training, without some prior time of apprenticeship and mentorship with adults who do know more than they do about some things, even though the kids may not always think so. It is up to us. We are the educators. We are the adults. And I do believe DOPA will probably pass if we look at what the vote was in the House. But I think, and I'm just saying this after learning it yesterday, that it's an opportunity to have conversations about these issues. And I know it's an election year. There's a lot of election year stupidity that happens. But we've got to be talking to people about preparing kids, you've heard this before, for their future, not our past, and their future is going to include driving alone on the internet. So, thank you very much, and we're going to take about a 5-minute break.
Moving at the Speed of Creativity podcasts are independently produced and syndicated for a global audience by Wesley Fryer and are shared under a Creative Commons Attribution 2.5 license. Learn more at www.speedofcreativity.org.